Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. My colleague and co-host Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, and we welcome his colleague, John Hardy, writing most recently at the National Security Journal. He also writes for Bill's Long War Journal about Russia watching the American B-2 strike on suspect nuclear weapons sites in Iran. The headline in the Reuters in these moments tells the story of Russia. Putin tells Iranian foreign minister there was no justification for U.S. attack. The comment, to quote, "The absolutely unprovoked aggression against Iran has no basis and no justification," said the president of the Russian Federation to Araghchi, the foreign minister of Iran. John, I come to you immediately because Russia did not hesitate whatsoever to support its ally, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Anticipating this, Russia has very good intelligence, but the U.S. kept the secret of the strike from even Moscow at this point, we can believe, unless they decided not to tell people because there was an advantage to provoking everybody else by these negative statements. What are we watching for about Iran and Russia? Are they ordering more S-300s? Are they putting in S-400s? Is Russia deploying aircraft? What do we know directly between Moscow and Tehran? Good evening to you, John.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me back on the show. Glad to be here. It's interesting. You're right in that the Russians were quick to support the Iranians with words, but they have taken really no action to support their strategic partner. Folks may remember there was a strategic partnership agreement they signed earlier this year, but it notably did not include a mutual defense clause. Russian officials have been at pains to point that out since the Israeli operation began. And so I think right now, you know, Putin's made clear he will not intervene militarily. He even kind of chided the Iranians for allegedly earlier not showing enough interest in buying Russian air defense systems. So I think right now, even more covert forms of support, you know, maybe funneling man pads or something into Iran, seems really unlikely and probably wouldn't have much of an effect on the military situation in Iran anyhow. So I think, you know, right now the Russians are really limited to trying to insert themselves in some diplomatic role. Putin has, you know, called the Iranian and Israeli and American leaders to offer Russian help in mediating the conflict. But right now, it doesn't really seem any of the parties are super interested in Russian mediation. I think even on the Iranian side, there's some mistrust that the Russians would actually have their best interest at heart should Moscow play that role.
You write a provocative and persuasive piece for the National Security Journal, which, and you're not responsible for the headline, but it's a fair reflection of your thoughts. Israel-Iran war is a double-edged sword for Putin's Russia. How so, John?
Sure. So on the one hand, you have kind of a bump in oil prices. We'll see exactly how long that lasts. If it does last, it's good for Russian economy and budget, which is struggling at the moment. It could divert Western attention and arms supplies further away from Ukraine, especially on the air defense side. There's already, even before the Israeli operation began, the Pentagon reportedly diverted some counter-drone rockets to the Middle East. And then if Russia does succeed in kind of playing a mediator role, it could allow it to curry more favor with Trump and kind of bolster its influence in the region. I mean, for months, Russia has been offering or pointing to Iran in conversations with Trump as a potential area for cooperation, precisely because it wants to kind of de-link its relations with the U.S. from the Ukraine file. But on the other hand, the Russians certainly did not welcome the kind of escalation intention, or rather they fear the escalation could be kind of destabilizing for the broader region with potential spillover into Russia's neighbors and maybe Russia itself. They certainly do not welcome a unilateral U.S. military intervention in Iran. And I think that the talk of potential regime change in Iran is particularly worrisome for the Russians. So I think right now that they're really just on the sidelines watching. There's not a whole, they don't have a whole lot of great options to shape Israeli and U.S. decision making. So I think they're really just, you know, looking for an opportunity to insert themselves diplomatically. And as I say, you know, that opportunity may well not come.
Bill, good evening. You have a question for our colleague, Mr. Hardy.
Yeah, John, that was an excellent article. And, you know, want to kind of continue down that path of this double-edged sword. I think that this, the Israeli and U.S. strikes on Iran really shows just how that axis of aggressors between Russia and China and North Korea and Iran, how that's skin deep. I mean, the Russians, you know, they may give lip service to the Iranians, but the support is going to be limited. You know, so, you know, to add to that, to the dilemma here, on one hand, the, you know, Iran has been providing drone and the knowledge for manufacturing these drones to be used to strike against Russia. And as you mentioned, you know, Israel, the U.S. support for Israel, that's funneling away weapons, but also diplomatic support for the Ukrainians. And it's drawing attention away from that war. It's putting the focus on the situation in Iran. What do you think that the final position for the Russians is on this war? Do the Russians want this? Is it a net benefit for this war to continue, or do they want this war to end?
I do think they want it to de-escalate. I don't think they like kind of unchecked, what they would see as unchecked escalation in the region. You know, it's kind of in Russia's, pretty near to Russia's own backyard. You know, they never like it to be really frozen out in the Middle East. They think, you know, they fancy themselves a great power with kind of the birthright to be on the, maybe we can call it the global board of directors, where you have a seat at the table and kind of get to decide matters of global import. So the fact that they are kind of on the sidelines watching it is not a comfortable position for them. You know, that's a, you know, we've already covered kind of some of the benefits and risks for the Russians in this conflict. I certainly don't think they want it to see it escalate further. And I think they, you know, any talk of regime change is especially problematic for them. If the Iranian regime were to be toppled, you know, what might come next could very well be less favorable to Russia, both for its geopolitical interests and also economic projects like, you know, Russian energy investment in Iran or the north-south transport corridor, a kind of project they've been working on with the Iranians for many years now. So, you know, I think they do want the escalation to end. And as I say, they've trying to insert themselves as mediators, you know, kind of leveraging their fact that they are able to, you know, talk to the Iranians, the Israelis, the U.S. But again, I'm just not sure that effort will come to fruition for them.
Iran is no stranger to the Ukrainian-Russian conflict. For months, perhaps more than a year, we've heard of Iranian drones, part of the strike package launched by Iran, by Russia. There's reason to believe there's missile transfer technology, too. Russia's digging deep in everybody's pocket to keep up the deployment. So looking at this from the Ukrainian point of view, is it consistent with Ukraine's expectation that Tehran and Israel's tangle distracts from them, helps them? Is there an opinion in Kyiv that we can talk about, John?
Yeah, I think the Ukrainians are, on the one hand, gratified to see this, you know, partner in the so-called axis of aggressors kind of getting some just desserts. On the other hand, I don't think there's an expectation that the Israeli and now U.S. operation will significantly hamper Russia's own war effort. The biggest form of support the Russians have received from Iran are these Shahed 136 one-way attack drones, which Russia now locally produces itself, and actually in far greater numbers than it got from the Iranians. So, you know, I don't think there'll be much impact there. And in terms of other kind of military support the Iranians have given Russia, it's not super significant. There's been some artillery ammunition, for example, but in quantities really dwarfed by what Russia gets from North Korea. And then the close-range ballistic missiles, you know, some hundreds of missiles, according to U.S. and Western officials, that Iran transferred to Russia last year. You know, those have yet to see action in Ukraine, possibly because the Iranians haven't sent the actual launchers for them, although there were recent reports that they were going to do so soon. But I think either way, you know, however that shakes out, it's not a huge impact on the war, you know, either in the plus or minus column for Russia.
Bill, you have a question for Mr. Hardy.
John, earlier you mentioned that the Russians chided the Iranians for not buying Russian air defense systems. I'm assuming you're referring to the S-400 systems. And if so, why didn't the Iranians buy them? And do you think they would have been effective against the Israeli efforts to clear the skies?
It wasn't exactly clear what Putin was referring to. And I think, you know, for the Iranians, it might be a little bit of salt in the wound, given that, you know, the negotiations with Russia on certain air defense assets, whether it's surface-to-air missile or like fighter jets like the Su-35, are always kind of fraught with, you know, Russia's own calculations regarding its relations with other powers in the Middle East, especially Israel and the Gulf Arab states, despite its deepening relations with Iran. And they certainly have deepened, especially since 2022. So I don't want to kind of give short shrift to that. But the Russia still kind of plays all sides in the Middle East. That's kind of its basic approach. And so it does factor in, you know, the objections of other powers when it's considering when these arms sales. I think a great example is the supposed consideration of transfer of anti-ship missiles to the Houthis last year. Reportedly, the Saudis were able to kind of convince the Russians not to go that route. So, again, it's unclear exactly what Putin is referring to. It's possible that another thing to keep in mind in with Iran and Russia on arms sales is that, you know, price is often an issue. So, you know, the Russians aren't just going to give something away for free. Whereas on the other hand, the Iranians are often really tough negotiators who want to negotiate the price and then renegotiate it. So it's possible that that was also a factor. But again, we don't know exactly what systems Putin was referring to, or whether there's any, you know, there.
This is CBS Eye on the World. We're speaking with John Hardy of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. You can find John's new piece on the Iran conflict at the National Security Journal. Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, keeps the Long War Journal, where John also files. We're going to turn to a meeting in Real and Present Necessary, which is a NATO meeting happening this week now in Northern Europe, in the Netherlands. The assumption was this would be about the request by Mr. Zelensky to speed up the isolation of Russia with additional sanctions. Now that we have a new conflict in the Middle East, what to watch for from NATO?
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
L-E-T-E-N-P-C. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.